to get started, I'm going to first introduce the people right down in a row that's on the webcast. But before I get started, are there any questions about the procedure and the agenda? All right, I'm going to introduce the people that are right here on the webcast so you know who they are. And if you're looking on the computer, you can read the names just like I can. But one is Larry Weinstock, and he's our CARE Grant team leader. And I want him to just say something so they'll recognize his voice. I guess you would anyway. He's the only guy in the room, but.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the call, and we appreciate all your interest in the CARE program.
Okay, the second one is Jeannie Conklin, and she's our, I call her our grants group guru because I go to her for any questions I have. And she's here to make sure we continue to stay legal and we do everything in a proper manner. And so, Jeannie, could you just...
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon.
And the third person is Michelle Mandolia, and she's our tracking team lead for the CARE program. And she handles all questions about measurements or performance and stuff like that. And so, Michelle, could you?
Sure. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to start. And if you look on the web page, there's a little button that says Go to Seminar down below the names. And if you click that on, which I'm clicking right with you, if you haven't logged on, you have to, and I haven't logged on, it seems. Okay. Okay. All right. And I'm logged on. And then what's going to come up is a screen that's going to send you right to our proposal. I mean, our presentation. And mine's a little slow, but it's coming. And I'm going to go over that presentation with you. It's only about 8 pages. And as soon as that comes up, that's odd. Mine's not coming up. Do you guys have the presentation up? Anyone?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good. Glad you have it up. Oh, here it comes. All right. It was Marva. Okay, the first presentation says Request for Proposals, CARE Program, January, February 2008. You see that. We'll go to the second slide. And the second slide basically tells you what CARE is. And it's a community-based, community-driven program, which means that we have to build partnerships in the communities to understand and reduce toxic risk. Which means we want a variety of partners in this partnership that live, work, and play in the community. But we also want the residents. And these are the CARE goals. There are standard goals that we have, and it's in the RFP. You're going to see them a lot of places. You know, we want to reduce exposures to toxic pollutants. We want to help you as a community gain an understanding of all your risks. We want to work with you to set priorities for risk reduction, and we want to help you create a self-sustaining community-based partnership that will continue on once the grant funds are over. Next slide is called Strategies to Achieve the Goals, and these are some strategies we feel that will help you achieve the goals. I don't think I have to read unless, I guess I do have to read if people are on the phone. If you haven't downloaded the documents, I will read them. The strategies are provide information, tools, and technical assistance to help communities understand and access their risks. Collaborate with community stakeholder groups to prioritize plans for risk reduction. Mobilize local resources and utilize EPA voluntary programs. Implement risk reduction activities and link EPA programs together. Efficiently support the communities. Next slide. This is a schematic that we have that shows you how CARE works. If you look at the number one and two, it says join together and identify problem solutions. Those are the, in a synopsis, that's what a level one care grant agreement does. We ask you to form your partnership or to, if you already have a partnership, to increase it to be able to produce results in the project you're planning, and to identify problems and solutions. That's your assessment process. A care level two is for implement solutions and reduce risk. So that's when you use the EPA voluntary program to put in some solutions to the problem you described in a level one. And the four is becoming self-sustaining. We expect everyone at level one and level two become self-sustaining, but we especially emphasize it in the level two because the care funding you will no longer get any care funding after that. So we want to make sure that you're on board and able to go out and seek other funding and seek other in-kind services to help you continue on with your project. Next slide. This is how we fund the care communities. The level one is funded at a average of $90,000. Level two at an average of $275,000. They're nationally competed cooperative agreements. Next slide is the title is Care is More Than Money, because that's what we believe. Care is more than money. We give you money, but it's especially for level one, it's seed money to help you get going. The main things that we think we give you that's just as important as money is technical support and information, scientific expertise, help with community planning to identify and reduce risk, access with a point of contact to the EPA voluntary program, networking opportunities, and shared learning. Amongst each other, all care communities. The two, there's a number here, which is the care hotline that's manned by a care administrative team person on a daily basis to get your questions off the hotline, and you also can send in questions to the website. Jennifer Connor, is the person who is reviewing the CARE website for your questions. And so that's all for the CARE presentation. I'm going to get rid of that. Okay. And I want to go directly to your questions. Let's see. Go back to home. If you hit home on that presentation page, it'll take you directly back to the questions, to your front page. So what I'll do first is take a question from the people on the telephone. And then we'll take a question from people on the webpage. So, does anyone have a question that's on the telephone?
And that's #6 to unmute.
Yes.
Hi, this is Marnie Carroll at Dene College, Navajo Nation.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Our question is, we have a variety of community projects that are in various levels of sophistication because there's as you can imagine, there's a great need on the Navajo Reservation for this kind of work. We were wondering, we have some projects that would probably classify as level two and some that would be level one. So that was our first question. Should we just focus on level one projects first?
Well, hi, this is Larry. We can't tell you what projects to or not to focus on, but I'm not sure that you're completely getting the concept. If you view it, a project is not like, we're going to go retrofit a bunch of school buses. That's not a CARE project. CARE project is a is where you take a geographic area and you do work where you bring the people who live and work, you know, the businesses in that area and the local government together to analyze risks, analyze all the toxic risks in those communities, prioritize risks, and then start to address them. So CARE is really a process. And, for example, we've had other Indian tribes, like the Cherokee, actually have their own grant for the Cherokee Nation. So I'm not you have to decide how you want to do this, but if you're, when you talk about projects, I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but you should be thinking of this in a geographic sense of a community and an area where you're bringing the people together to go through the CARE process. And you're only eligible for a level 2 grant if you've already done the equivalent of a CARE level 1 process in that community. So you can't have a level 2 grant. You won't be eligible unless you already have a community stakeholder group that includes businesses and industry and residents and local government and the residents, and that they've done the analysis of their risks and prioritized what are the top risks in their community.
I don't see any questions on the webpage right now. Just to remind people, you can actually type a question in. If you went back to that front page, there was a question mark at the top. That's how you type your question in.
Hello, may I ask a question?
Yes, you can ask a question. I was just letting the others know.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
In. Yeah, you can go ahead and ask, though.
Yes, I'm in Washington, D.C. My name is Mike Jackson. I'm trying to find out the number of risk items that have to be listed when you prioritize. We haven't applied for this before, and in trying to apply for it, what's the optimum number of risk items that you would like to see within the proposal?
Well, we're not looking for, there's no optimal number of risk items. What we want in your proposal to talk about how you're going to bring the community, create the stakeholder group, bring it together, and how you're going to look at risks in air, water, and waste, air, water, and waste,
mm-hmm.
in indoor environments and things like that. So it's not a question, I don't really understand the question. You wouldn't, we do ask at one point, what are some of the risks in your community, and we're looking to see, what we're trying to do is go to areas that need our help, so we're just looking for a general description of what are some of the environmental risks in your community, and it's nice to see that there are things in more than one media, in more than just, air risks or just waste risks or
mm-hmm.
just water
mm-hmm.
risks, but there's not like a, quote, optimal number.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Kathy Ramsey with Houston Galveston Area Council. We're working with a rural county that has primarily health issues in terms of on-site wastewater treatment system. Would that sort of remediation we're doing as part of a RETA recovery program, would that qualify for the CARE process, or are you looking strictly for toxic substances in water and air pollution?
Well, there are two separate questions there. The first one is, we have a very broad view of toxics as basically bad stuff in the environment that's hurting the environment or the health of the people who live there. So in terms of the specific risks you were talking about, that would be fine. But again, the CARE process is one in which the community comes together to look at risks from all of the different risks and from all different kinds of sources in the community. And this is a really common mistake, and I really can't stress this enough. We are not looking for people who go, we have a problem in this, we have this specific problem. And we know that if we only, we care about diesel emissions, or we care about lead paint, or we care about, whatever this pollutant is in the water, we're looking for people who are willing to do an investigation of all the risks And there are two reasons for this. One is that we often find that the risks that people kind of just off the top think are the worst risks in their community aren't always the worst risks. And we want people to really look. And that's one of the things that we bring is we bring information to help you do that. But the other thing is you're in the care process. At the end of the day, we are trying to create something of lasting value to the community. And part of that is an improved environment. But the other part of that is this stakeholder group that has worked together, that has achieved results, that is self-sustaining because it's achieved results. Other people are willing to provide other resources to this group to continue going and to continue doing their work. And part of the process of bringing a group together and getting it to stay together and be able to function and to prioritize risk is going through an analysis where everybody has a common set of information, where everybody can understand what other people's concerns are. So we actually get nervous when people are about, the only problem in our community is X. Because the only problem in your community is not X. I mean, unless you're like one of three communities in the entire United States. Everybody has problems in different areas, and part of the process of bringing this stakeholder group together is to go through that, and that's how you build a group that can last over time. So while the area that you're concerned with is fine for a care project, we're not looking for people to come in unless they can show that they've really brought the community together and done this broad-scale analysis and said, we've prioritized the risk and everybody in the community agrees that this is the only thing they have to worry about. You've really done an analysis and can show that, we'd be willing to accept that because we are trying to drive up what the community thinks, but we need you to go through this process first.
Now, I have a number of people on that has written in questions on the computer, so I'm going to read at least two before we go back to the phone. Okay, the first one is from Casey Lord out of Dayton, Ohio. In a level one application, how detailed does the application need to be in identifying the partners in their participation? For parentheses, do we need written communication? Parentheses. Also, how detailed should we get in identifying the environmental issues facing our community?
The first question is in identifying the partner. We're looking for a list of the partners and kind of what they are, if it's not obvious, because we don't always know by the name of an organization who they're representing. And some sense of if they're just members of the stakeholder group, if they bring something special to the table, we want to know about that. You are not required to have written commitments, but we're weighing you in comparison to other people who will have written commitments. And from our point of view, you know, more partners is better and fewer partners. Broader spectrum of partners is better. If all your partners are just community groups or all your partners are just businesses, that's not, you know, that's going to not score as well as somebody who has businesses and community groups and local government together. If you have states and universities, that's, you know, also helpful. But at a minimum, we're really looking for those three groups of residents, business, and local government. When you write down that you have somebody who's agreed to work with you, we give that some weight. But obviously, if they've written and they've made a commitment on paper to us, then that gets more weight. So do you have to have letters? No, you don't have to have letters. But all things being equal, if we have two grants and one has letters and we have two applications and one has letters and the other doesn't, and they're otherwise equal, the people with the letters are going to get the money.
I'm sorry, did you?
Second part of the question.
Oh, how detailed in identifying environmental issues? If it's a level one, we are not looking for a large, a high level of detail. We're looking for a general sense of what the issues are. You certainly should be able to do that in a couple of paragraphs at most. If it's a level two, we're not necessarily looking for more information, but we're looking for a little, you know, in theory, if you're applying for level two, you've done a level one analysis. And so instead of just saying that, you know, we know that we are in, you know, we have bad air quality and there's a lot of old homes with lead paint and, you know, a couple of kind of general things that, you know, somebody looking around a community can sense. We expect a little bit more detailed information which to demonstrate that you've really done an analysis of some quality. Now, this does not mean we're not looking for detailed risk assessments. You're not going to do one. We're not looking for you to say we have a risk of X, you know, this risk of cancer and this risk of, you know, of that, but just a little bit more detail that shows that you've really done some work and some analysis.
Any question from the computer from Sam Lipson of Cambridge? We have a CBO that has already applied for a level 2 grant in the past and also a 2-city coalition to begin a level 1 process in the same community. Is there any problem with 2 submissions from the same geographical area?
There's no problem. Here's the thing. Any organization can only submit one application. If 2 different organizations from the same geographic area submit an application, that's okay, and that's happened in the past. One of the things we are looking for is a second level criteria is we are trying to spread these around, and so it is extremely unlikely that we would fund 2 people in the same geographic area. I can't say that we would never do that, but it would be, we are looking to spread the money around to different places and get different kinds of communities and different kinds of projects, so it is unlikely that we would do that. But if you know somebody else in your community is applying, you can apply, but you can't have 2 applications.
And there is a question on the web that says, are awarded grant applications located on the CARE website? We don't put grant applications on the website. We do put a abstract, project abstract, and the names of the of our CARE recipients on the website. And now we're going to go back to the phone. A question from the phone? Anyone?
This is Terry Nordbrook in Tucson, Arizona. I wanted to get more information about what Larry just addressed. If there's an organization in Tucson that already received a level 1 grant in the past, would I be wasting my time to submit an application covering the same area?
Well, if they have a level 1 application, if they're doing a level 1 project in your area, then it would be duplicative to have 2 level 1 projects in the exact same neighborhood. That makes no sense. So
we would suggest working with them.
Yeah, you should partner with them and become part of their process. But we wouldn't fund 2, they would be competing with each other. It wouldn't make any sense.
Would it make sense to partner with them to put in a level 2?
Sure, okay. You could do that.
And did you say that one organization can only be funded once? Like, would they be able to apply for a level 2?
No, you can only apply once per year. So, if you're the ABC community group, you can't put in, 3 applications. You can only put in 1. So we won't. Otherwise, we'll throw all of them out if you send us more than 1 application. But, you know, next year you can apply. In a level 1, we encourage our level 1s that are successful to apply for level 2.
Okay.
We'll take 1 more from the phone, and then we'll go to the web for 2. So we'll take 1 more from the phone.
Hi, this is Rebecca from Bellingham, Washington. And I'm wondering about the activities that would be involved with the inventory itself and also analyzing the toxics problem. With the inventory, you know, are you looking for identifying existing data or is there also a collection of new environmental data? And with the analysis, would that be recruiting experts locally or experts from the EPA or other experts?
Okay. We're looking for, remember, we're giving you about $90,000 and 2 years, and you have other things to do. So we're not looking for a detailed, analysis with lots of new data. But most of what you would do would be using existing data from EPA, from the local government, from the state government. You may be able, if you can fit in if there's some additional data collection, that's certainly okay. We're not looking for big science projects here. That's not what we're looking for. So the analysis we're looking at is really a kind of screening level analysis, looking at as many different sources as possible and about which there's information in the community.
We're going to go to the web and we're going to ask, take two questions from the web. Alex from LA, Los Angeles, is asking, under joining together and identifying problems, how technical can the CARE Level 1 grant get? For example, as we do our stakeholder engagement, are we talking about identifying problems by using scientific means, water, noise, and air testing in partnership with a university? Is that covered?
Okay. You can definitely, as I said, we're trying to have you use, we want you to use good data. We think in most communities there is data available, as I said before, from government sources. Again, as I said, last question, you definitely can do some testing, but it's going to be, you know, relatively simple because you just have limited amounts of funding. As far as expertise goes, we do provide our expertise to help you with that. But if there are experts who are local who can get involved, like a university, that, you know, is more to the good. So that might, you know, make your application look better compared to other people. But you know, you shouldn't feel that if we don't have a bunch of technical experts signed on board that we can't have a good CARE application and we can't have a good CARE project.
We have another question from Phyllis. From Winsboro, Texas. Would check of soil contamination for an old gas station qualify?
Again, that relates to what I was just saying. Certainly that's something that would be okay to spend money on, but we're also, you know, again, this isn't, you know, detailed analyses, and certainly we would be looking for a bigger scope than just a gas station as part of the CARE project.
All right, we're going to take two from the phone.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob Lato calling from the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewyans in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. My question is regarding identification of our stakeholders in our application. We already have a group of identified stakeholders just in the tribal community consisting of four First Nation tribes, two American and two Canadian. We'd like to use the Level 1 CARE Grant process to expand upon this group to different stakeholders in the area. My question is, what type of constraints do you put on a stakeholder group? Will we be able to use this as an international group as far as including Canadian stakeholders as well as our own American community, local businesses, university, and whatnot?
Hey, this is Jeannie. You can have foreign stakeholders. Canada is a foreign country. But your grant has to go to an eligible U.S. grantee. So your grantee would have to be in the United States and be an eligible entity. The stakeholders could be across the borders as well.
But the money needs to be focused on and the American because this is a domestic grant.
Okay, correct, yeah. Just curious about the stakeholders. Just want to know if we could include stakeholders from the Canadian side, though.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Another question from the phone.
Hi, this is Betty from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I just have a question about the size of a community. In your direction, you said New York is too big. Would Milwaukee be, the city of Milwaukee be an acceptable community?
We don't draw such bright lines. I would look to what some of the other grants are. Generally, when we've done cities, they tend to be smaller than Milwaukee, things like Rochester and New Haven. But, I'm not sure exactly how many people live in Milwaukee, so it's hard for me to say for sure.
Under a million, so it's smaller now, so I'm guessing maybe 600,000-700,000.
We don't have a direct bright line, but it would be an extra challenge for you to show how you could get the whole city involved in a project like this and really get representation from the residents and in the area. It's not to say we wouldn't allow it, but you may want to consider whether the entire city or a portion of the city would be better served.
Thank you. I'm sorry, you done?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I didn't want to cut you off. Okay, I'm going to take two from the web. William from New York. We are currently in the process of implementing a series of presentations to inform low-income communities in New York City about renewable energy policy and incentives. Would this initiative fall under CARE? Also, how does CARE specifically define stakeholder community? Is Manhattan too broad, for example?
Okay. As far as the, we are not funding people to go make a series of presentations to on any topic, no matter how important, to a series of different people. We are talking about this CARE process where we bring people together in a community. Manhattan, which I know has well over a million people, is definitely too large, just from the number of people who live in Manhattan. And a stakeholder community is all the people within a geographic area. So you need to be careful, even in smaller areas that are of themselves, not too big to be a care community, you can't have a focus on just some subpopulation. In the past, we've gotten applications where people just wanted to do workers in a specific industry, and that's not acceptable, or just school children, or just people, you know, whatever it is. It's all, a community is all the people who live within it. It has to have a geographic boundary, and we're including everybody who's there. The other thing about the presentations, I just want to remind everybody, and this is just general advice when you're applying for a grant. Think about, we have this CARE process, and we want people to go through the four steps of the CARE process over time between a level one and a level two grant. No matter how good your idea is, and how wonderful it is, and whatever the results you might get, we're funding people to go through our four-step process. If you don't want to do that, don't apply, because you're not going to get money. I mean, when you apply for money for a grant, you have to think about what is the funder trying to fund, and make sure that your idea, no matter how wonderful, doesn't fit that, you're just not going to get it. I mean, if this was, you know, just to make it an extreme example, if we were, you know, you could have a project that will absolutely guarantee end all homelessness in America, which would be a wonderful thing if you could do it for $100,000 or even $300,000. But it's not a CARE program, CARE grant, and no matter how wonderful it is, we're not going to fund it, okay? So just kind of keep that in mind.
Okay, there's a question from Stephanie out of Greensboro, Pennsylvania. How big is too big for a community? I am interested in doing work in a large watershed. How would you support it to suggest it be broken into manageable sections to apply for a CARE grant?
Okay. As I said before, I don't know exactly how big the watershed is. I don't really want to get into discussions of that. But smaller generally is better, that you have a series of common interests and you can really bring the stakeholders together.
Okay, on the phone, we'll take two questions. On the phone, please.
Yes. Scott Krumpecker from USDA in Dexter, Missouri. Larry, I wanted to qualify a statement. You said something to the effect that we're not targeting specific industry. What about targeting agriculture? Would that be the same as targeting a specific industry?
Well, you can definitely include agriculture, and if it's an agricultural community, that might be the industry that's in your area that you would be bringing the agricultural businesses and the farmers in to be part of that grant, but you still have to look at all the risks in the community.
Okay.
Can we have thank you. Can we have another question from the phone?
Yeah, Chad Von Onen in Sedgwick County, Kansas. I have a question about the Level 1 grant. With the purpose of identifying problems and solutions, can you tell us what the restrictions are on that funding and what maybe some examples of what that's used for?
Well, some of the things that it would be used for is for holding meetings, getting information in the community, doing some analysis,
hiring a facilitator,
yeah,
space to bring people together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole long list of things that you can't do with government money. It'd be kind of just generically, I can't really answer that question.
And what you can't do is send an RFP.
Right. There's a whole list of things in the RFP, but, you know, there's, you know, obviously other general limitations on use of government funds. But.
Okay, thank you. We have to roll along because our time is limited here. I'm going to go to Paul on the web from Iowa. Our community is looking into drafting and implementing a citywide storm water management plan. Is this an activity that could qualify?
Again, as I said before, that's an activity that could be included in a CARE project, but that in and of itself isn't a CARE project. And I would just ask, and if we have these questions on the web, because I realized people put them in earlier, we're not going to go through a list of, I have this, will you fund it, kind of questions. So, please don't ask. I mean, we're just going to kind of skip those because I think we've said, you know, what a CARE project is. If you really have something you just don't understand, you can let us know. But just generally, we're not going to do those anymore.
Clara from Michigan represents a group of government and nonprofit agencies. Over the last 2 years, you've established a forum for collaboration on projects relating to the social economic issues. One subcommittee is focusing on PACE, EH, process. You want to begin to address the broader issue by conducting an inventory of emissions in the region so you can identify ways to reduce these impacts. Would this fit? Are we not going to talk about that. So, Clara, we advise you to go to our website and look under the questions and answers. Alex from LA wants to know about a successful, what's an indicator for successful community engagement? Should a stakeholder group be successful in making a policy change? Or is it enough for them to meet and make a resolution to identify the problem?
What we're looking for is ultimately getting reductions in risk, but we understand that level one projects may not do that at this point, but they should be building towards that, but we don't have these kind of specific indicators for success. Successful community engagement is when the community is really part of the process and is engaged in it, and that's a function of how much they're part of what's going on and have input to what's going on, not the results out of that.
Curtis from Virginia is asking a similar question about a geographic area of population size, and we've already explained that, and that's also in the questions and answers on the web. So we're going to go to the phone. Do you have a question from the phone?
Hello?
Question from the phone.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yes, specifying numbers in the community as it relates to the project, that would be helpful, I would assume, in the CARE 1 implementation, even though it's not going to be implemented. You are noting and giving definitive numbers of what you expect to do and how many people you expect to have involved in this process. Would that be helpful?
That would be helpful in an application.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Right, and also I neglected to tell you guys that at the bottom of the page is a link to additional resources where you will find the RFP as well as a checklist and a sample template. And on the sample template, it talks about that type of description of your community. So it's also in your RFP, of course. We just pulled it out into templates for you to see at a glance. Okay, one more question from the phone, and we'll go back to the web.
Go to the web.
Okay, we're going to go to the web. Diane from Apple Valley, is CARE only interested in known toxic hazards, or can the level one funding be used to organize a citizen focus group to identify and prioritize general? Yes, I think Larry's been saying that all along, that that's what CARE level one does. It, you organize your partnership to identify all your environmental pollutants in the community.
Right. And a focus group could be part of that process, but it has to be more than just that.
Chislane from Gisboro, New Jersey. Our town has a number of toxic dump sites that affect local streams. Would it be appropriate to adjust these with a CARE grant? Okay, this is another question that Larry has answered, and it'll be in the archives, and it's also in the questions and answers.
Yeah, question 45. The one thing I just want to point out is that anything that's been identified as a Superfund site or a brownfield site is not eligible for CARE funding. So it could be included if it's not, but if it is, then you can't include it.
One more question from the web from Aaron from Portland. I know you have stressed the need for business and industry partnerships in the stakeholder group. Can you please give some examples of best practices, business industry partnerships? Does this need to be a polluter or industry that has contributed to issues, or can it be any business industry that is in the community and has been a collaborative partner?
It can be any business, but obviously the more that it deals with the people who are part of the problem and need to be part of the solution, the better it is. And also people need to realize that if you have a consultant that you're planning to hire and that's in the grant as somebody you're going to use, we don't really consider that a business in terms of the partnership.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone. Take a couple from the phone. Any questions from the phone?
Yes. Can a county submit a CARE Level 1 application on behalf of a city within its boundaries?
Yes. Yeah.
Next question from the phone. Please let us know who you are, too. Okay, we're going to go to the web. If we have taken a question from you before, we're going to skip to the end for you, and we're going to just get new people. Jack from Kansas, are state universities eligible? Yes, the answer is yes. Another question is, in a level one, should we identify solutions to our environmental problems, or is this handled in level two?
You certainly can. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. If you can keep going and do more, then you should do more.
A question is, I may have missed this in your presentation, how much is an average CARE grant and how much funds are there for this fiscal year? An average CARE grant for level one is around $90,000. For level two, around $275,000. Funds for this year?
It's about $3
million. Okay. Diane from Montana, if you have not done a level one grant through CARE, but we have performed an equivalent to level one grant, can we then apply for a level two? Yes, Diane, you can. Of course, you need to articulate very clearly that you have done everything that a level one is asking for.
And just to emphasize that, almost all our level twos have not gone through a level one process because the program's too new.
We're going to go to the phone.
Hello, this is Alfreda Peters. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, Alfreda, thank you.
I'm from Washington State, and my question is PowerPoint presentation where it says linking volunteer programs. Do you have a list of the EPA volunteer programs?
Yes, if you go on our website, www.epa.gov/care, there is a link there for EPA volunteer programs, and you bring that up and you'll see the list.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other question from the phone?
Yeah, this is Marnie Carroll again at Dene College. Is there a preference for, you've got all these stakeholders together, is there a preference for one of those groups to be the one that actually receives the grant funding?
No. They just have to be an eligible entity, but no, there's no preference.
Okay.
We're going to the web. Mark from El Paso, Texas. Does it detract from an application if we are working specifically in two neighborhoods of the city? Instead of the city as a whole? No, it does not. We're answering questions from new people, and we'll, if we have time, we'll go back to people who've asked questions in the past. Adrienne from Pittsburgh. Would funding be more likely in a level two for a larger community if the coalition was diverse, broad-based, and large?
A large, diverse, broad-based stakeholder group is always better.
Okay.
And if it's ridiculously large, so it's unmanageable, that might be bad, but, you know.
Okay, Okay, let's go to the phone. Any questions on the phone?
Hi, this is Rebecca in Washington. I'm wondering about the relevance of diversity as far as different minorities and ethnic groups in our area. Is that something that we should emphasize on our applications?
Well, are you going to describe your geographical area, correct? So are you going to describe your demographics?
Right, and if, you know, if we have an opportunity to involve organizations that represent tribes, or things, you know, are those, is that something that the CARE Grant is interested in funding?
And, I mean, we want all stakeholders in that geographic area included.
Right.
So everything, everybody and above that you said, yes, we're interested, but it's still a competitive process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Anybody else on the phone?
Yes, this is Loretta from the state of Washington. Can tribes be the stakeholder in a CARE grant to do an environmental or a stakeholder assessment of environmental programs that need to be assessing whether the programs are assessing risks in the community?
Well, tribes are definitely a stakeholder if it's a tribal community. I mean, in a sense, I recognize tribes are equivalent to state governments. For purposes of a CARE grant, they're the local government that's in charge. So they're, key in that.
But can they be, say if there has not been a broad assessment of what the programs are doing, can there be the internal assessment?
You can't, if you're applying for level two, you have to go through the level one process, and an amazing risk assessment with no community involvement and no stakeholder group doesn't cut it. You have to do all of the things. You can't say, we've done this amazing analysis all by ourselves, and we don't have a stakeholder group, we haven't gone through the CARE level one process, but we have this great assessment, so we want to do it, then we want a level two, you're not going to be eligible.
No, I don't think that was my question, because within our community, the employees are also members of the tribe, and if you use the employees to be part of the stakeholder assessment, is that considered stakeholders?
Oh.
Yes, Steve.
I think if the simple fact that stakeholders were employees, is your way of indicating you've involved the broader community. I'm not sure that would count, because they were functioning very much, it sounds like, in their employee capacity, and probably, I mean, I'm not even sure if they would feel that they were representing the broader community if they were performing work under someone else's direction. I'm not sure what the specifics were.
Right. Although employees of local businesses are certainly people who could be included as a stakeholder group or as part of the community.
I mean, if it's an assessment that already happened and you're hoping to grandfather them in as having been part of the process, we're really looking for something broader than that.
I'm sorry, we have to push on because our time is getting ready to end. I'm going back to the web. There's a question. Will it fund a beach house? No. Let's see. Jesse from Littleton, Colorado, a Watershed Foundation of Colorado working with EPA, 319 grants and watershed grants for abandoned mines. Without duplication, we are searching for grant funds to implement long-term sustainability with business, community organizations, and local government to implement renewable energy generator projects on the surface of remediated sites. Would partnership development be eligible activities for CARE grants? I'm saying no. I mean, I don't see any.
It clearly looks too media specific already. You've already. It's definitely not a one.
Right.
Okay. Another question. Can level, maybe you make two. Level two grants fund construction of facilities or cleanup specific for dump sites. Same answer that Jeannie just gave.
Steve.
It looks too specific.
Okay,
we're on the phone. I'm sorry. You can go ahead, phone. Hello? Sir, you can go ahead.
Hello?
Did you have a question, sir?
Hello?
I can't hear you. Maybe you should hang up and call back. Question on the web from Sharon.
Hello? Yeah, okay. Yes, how you doing?
I'm sorry, could you put your phone on mute?
I'm on a seminar on this other
line. Could you put your phone on mute,
yes,
please? Star 6, mute. Thank you. Sharon said, I thought we couldn't do focus group space.
I wanted to ask you,
Hello?
Hello, could you put your phone on mute?
Hello?
Does someone have a question on the phone, please? Do you have a question, sir?
Hi, this is Rebecca in Washington. I'm just wondering about if it's too small of a size for a community, or what you'd say is the smallest kind of community.
Rebecca, I'm going to have to ask you to wait because we have a time limit and we have a lot of people who haven't asked questions.
Okay, sure.
And you can always email your question into the website. Sharon asked on the web, I thought we couldn't do focus groups because it says there are only 9 people surveyed. Aren't we counting focus groups as surveys? Focus groups are not surveys. Surveys are written materials, giving people a document, having them fill it out. So a focus group is talking to someone, and that's not a survey. Johanna from Alaska asked, We are in rural Alaska, and there is no form of local government in a borough or city sense. How do you suggest we make up for that in our application package if you expect local government to spearhead a care project?
Well, we don't expect the local government to spearhead a project. We expect them to be part of a project, and we have a care project with a Native American, a Native Alaskan tribal village, and the tribal village leadership is the local government in that case.
All right, we're going to go back to the web. And now I think I can have some questions of people who have not spoken before. Alberto from El Paso, Texas. Does EPA have the resources to render the promise assistance in Spanish?
Some is the key there. We do have a lot of materials in Spanish. We have some availability in some of our regional offices to get things translated in Spanish and to provide Spanish speakers. But it's some. It's not everything.
And if you're in Texas, I'm pretty sure Region 6 has that capability.
A lot
more than other regions. Okay. Is there any question on the line?
Let me just answer the too small a community question. I don't want to get absurd in this, but we certainly have projects at a neighborhood level, so that's pretty small.
Any questions on the phone?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, please.
This is Alfreda from Washington. I would like to ask the same question in a different way that was asked by Loretta. As a tribe, as a community partnership, I'm looking at it from a different point of view that these individuals are not only employees of the tribe, but they're also maybe the members of a different part of the community, such as in the longhouses, in the churches, that see these specific problems. And they would be bringing together to the table their ideas, not only as employees, but also as members of people living here in their, in this geographical region. So can they be considered as stakeholders because they have more than one interest, not only as the employees, but also as the individuals in their community group?
We understand that lots of people have more than one interest, but they're stakeholders if they're part of the people who live or work or own businesses in the community.
I mean, if the idea is that you're making a case that you've already gone through the level one process and are applying for a level two, then you're just going to really need to make a strong case that you've gone through what we consider a level one process.
Yeah.
And then I think that you have to see the selection panel.
This would be utilizing the employees as a level one process.
Okay. Let me go back again. A community includes all the people within a geographic area. So obviously workers, especially if they also live in the community, are one of the stakeholders. But you can't just say we're doing a care project with this subset of the community. And if you're only talking about the workers, or you're only talking about school children, or you're only talking about people who work in nail salons, or only talk about people who are painters, or only talk about agricultural workers, that's not the whole community. So it's got to be the whole community, but you certainly can include any of the subsets within that community.
All right, we're going to take a question from the web, and this is from Alex from Los Angeles. Can level one funding be used for a stipend for certain community members, example, for community members who are tradespeople and would suffer a financial impact with some meetings?
Yes. But make sure that when you are applying for the grant that you put those activities in there so there is no question that that is what your intent is. So that when we review it and you're selected, if you are, that those costs will be allowable and eligible as part of that scope of work.
Right. And they also need to be reasonable relative to the time that people are spending.
Okay, question on the web from Sam Lipson from Cambridge. Can you explain the commitment to involve one or more EPA voluntary programs in fulfillment of the grant level one? Also, are there any stated or implied restrictions on the data sources the process will use in their assessment, and will grantees have access to EPA research centers?
Okay. First of all, you don't have to have a – we want you to bring voluntary programs, you know, if you're level two, ultimately to use voluntary programs to improve your community. We're hoping, and we find generally that people do want to use EPA programs because they exist. We have resources to support them. But you don't have to use EPA programs, and you certainly for level one don't have to mention which specific ones you're going to use because you haven't decided what your priorities are. If you've decided what your priorities are, you again don't have to mention them, although having some sense of what you might do about your priorities is certainly helpful. Now, on the second point, there are no stated restrictions on data resources. We will do the best we can to get EPA information to you. I don't know exactly what you mean by the research centers. We're not necessarily going to bring out a research team to go do some huge assessment of your community, but certainly data that we have available and some ability to speak to some experts, at least by phone, is, you know, we certainly would do that.
And I would just add that when a grant is awarded, a regional team is formed around that project, and if there are certain connections or access to information you need, you'll be working with the region to get those.
Great. And the only implied restriction on the data is we're expected to be, you know, of reasonable quality. If you are going to go out and get data, you're going to have to do some kind of plan to show that you're going to have quality data.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone for a little while. But do we have any questions from the phone? All right, we're going back to the web. Aaron from Portland. In regards to programmatic capability reporting environmental results, number 7 of the evaluation criteria, how important is it that an organization has had a previous EPA project? Is it preferred that the lead organization in the collaborative has had an EPA project or grant previously?
Okay, this is past performance, and all we're asking is if you've had a project. And if you have, then, of course, we're going to go back and check and see if you actually did what you said you were going to do in that project and if you were compliant. We're looking for compliance here. If you've never had a grant that is not going to hurt you because we're going to give you a neutral score in that area. But we do check on past performance of former grantees and other programs.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the phone to see if there's any questions from the phone. Again, now we are taking anyone who has spoken before. So you can submit a question.
This is Marnie Carroll again from Dene College. One concern that I still have is the idea that community members may perceive environmental risks inaccurately. And so I'm wondering, how do we, people personally often feel a certain environmental risk or hazard is actually greater than it really is, and there may be other hazards that they're not even aware of. And so I guess I'm wondering, how do we deal with that in terms of putting in our proposal?
The partnership is not just the community residents, and the partnership looks at the broad-based environmental pollutants in the community. So within the partnership, you deal with that. You have to talk about a process to include all members of the partnership to help decide what are the greatest risks.
And it includes educating one another and some self-education. That's absolutely part of the process. So that's why it's good to have a group with a broad base of expertise.
Right. And have a process for showing that you're going to bring in the best data that you can.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to recognize the whole point of CARE is that we're doing a consensus process for all the members in the community, and that means we're not going in and saying we are the technical experts and we know what your top risks are, and your consensus will be this list of three risks because we say they're the most, the science tells us they're the highest risk, and the project itself has to be open to that as well, that in a consensus process, people are going to judge risks differently, and you provide the best information and people work together and work out ways to come to a common understanding.
All right, we're going to go back to the web. Alex from Los Angeles asks, this is regarding how EPA isn't interested in funding two grants in the same geographical area. We noticed that Pacoma Beautiful is funded. They're in this greater Los Angeles region, and so are we. But our project area is more than 15 miles away. Both project areas are approximately 40 square miles. We're in Compton. They're in the San Fernando Valley. It's a different world. Is it different enough, far away enough, to justify another CARE Level 1 grant?
It is definitely far away enough to justify a separate CARE Level 1 grant because it is a separate community. But I still want to just emphasize, we have examples where we have had two CARE grants in the same metropolitan area, you should just realize, have a preference to have geographic diversity. So it is not, you can definitely get a grant for Compton, but you have to recognize that is going to be, somewhat held against you. But people have overcome that in the past, and you certainly may be able to as well.
Question from the phone.
Hi, this is Bob Lato from Sault Ste. Marie again. I'm just wondering about the monies of the grant. Upon receiving the grant, is there things that pre-allocations for the money, for example, does EPA require the recipient of the grant on behalf of the community to attend EPA trainings or any sort of events for conferences towards this grant?
We have a training requirement. If you're a nonprofit, and even if you're not, if you're a new grantee, we have a training requirement. We would require you to take an online class to make sure that you properly knew how to manage your money. And then the CARE program has some requirements as well.
It's listed in your RFP, but we require you to go to a national training workshop every year. And that's listed out in your RFP. It's also shown as an example on the budget example in the back. So we put it up there so you can see that. So there are some requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. From the web, it says, regarding the question about funding construction or cleanup, If the level one process has clearly identified that there is a need for a facility to be built or a cleanup of a site, in order to make further progress towards reducing priority risk, can a level two care grant potentially fund that construction or cleanup?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this, be really careful with this. This has to do with statutory authority. And EPA has very limited statutory authorities in these places. So if you did identify it, we would have to have a discussion with the lawyers to make sure that we have the ability to fund those type of projects. EPA builds very few buildings, and our cleanups, for the most part, are done through our brownfield and our Superfund program.
On the phone, any questions from the phone? Okay, on the web, Diane from Littleton, Colorado says, can care grants be used to enhance outreach to stakeholders and other potential partners with the intent to grow a partnership in our project? Yes, you can.
Please do. Please do.
Right. Just remember that your project is the care project, which you're taking through this four-step process. If you have some other project that's going on and you just want to use care funding to increase the number of stakeholders involved in your pre-existing project, then that wouldn't count.
Right.
Okay, any questions from the phone? Okay, Diane from Apple Valley says, our main purpose in seeking care funding is to be able to involve individuals representing a cross-section of the entire community. From your experience, is there an optimum number of individuals to work as a community environmental focus group? If a larger number of citizens express an interest in participating, where and how should a limit to the size of the committee be drawn?
Okay. There's no specific limit, but this sounds also like you are not trying to use care funding to do a care project, but to enhance some pre-existing project that is not part of the care process. So that wouldn't be eligible anyway and wouldn't get funded.
And if you did, if we're incorrect in that assessment and you applied and were successful in getting funding, then it's as a part of your process, you could work on identifying that ideal number. I think it would be hard to theoretically determine what that ideal size would be. It really depends on your community.
Okay, any questions on the phone? All right, so we don't have any more questions. I want to remind you of some things. One is, again, at the bottom of the front page of the CARE website, there is a link to additional resources. And with that link, you can hit it and go into a link of resources that has the RFP that you can download, the templates you can download, and the checklist. And I advise you to do that because that will help clarify some things. We produce these documents to help simplify the RFP for you. Again, you still have to read the RFP. These documents came from the RFP, but it might give you an at-a-glance look on what you need. Also, I want you to, on the other side of that CARE website, there is a seminar feedback form button. We ask you to click on that and give us your opinion of the seminar. I gave you Dennis O'Connor's name at the very beginning. Dennis O'Connor is the person who you will address questions for after the seminar is over with. And what I'll do is I'll make sure his name and email is on the CARE Clouin website for you to have. I'll do that when I get back to the office in a little while.
You can also just go on our website and hit the Contact Us button on the CARE website and submit a question that way.
I want to remind you that there are two more websites. Again, you do not have to be a part of those.
Webcast.
Again, you do not have to be a part of those. They're on February 11th and February 27th. But you are, you can join. It's just that there will be an archive set up where you can listen to those if you cannot make it. And we're archiving all of these webcasts. And there's a link on the Clouin webcast for that, as well as a link on a www.epa.gov/care site for that. Thank you for joining us today. If there's no more questions, we're going to end the webcast. So thank you very much for joining us. One more question.
No.
Thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll see you, some of you, probably February 11th.